This episode is brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms Chicken. No antibiotics, herbicides, or pesticides. Just pure chicken, humanely raised on a vegetarian diet. It's the natural choice of celebrated chefs. For more information, visit m.springermountainfarms.com.
Heritage Radio Network on tour. We're your hosts. I'm Katie Mosman-Wadler.
I'm still Jack Inslee, standing here somehow all the eating that we've been doing for the past 2 days.
We're staying strong.
Yes.
We're doing good. We are on location today in Nashville, Tennessee. We're with Chef Tandy Wilson at City House.
We're actually at the chef's counter, too. This is awesome. This is the first interview I've done where I'm looking at a fire and a chef at the same time.
Several fires,
that's true.
We're basking in the glow of the wood fire pizza oven, and we're also facing the, how many burners have we got there? It's like about a dozen burners.
12, yeah. Good dozen burners.
Yeah, beautiful open kitchen here.
And our guest tonight's fresh off of an appearance on Bourdain's Parts Unknown, right? The season finale.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the talk of Nashville now.
It is literally the talk of the town.
Awesome.
We're so lucky today to be hanging out with Tandy Wilson. His name's been coming up a lot on this trip because he has been a mentor and a role model to so many great chefs in the area. And he's drawing huge national recognition as well. The Parts Unknown is just the beginning. And he was recently named Best New Chef in the Southeast by Food & Wine. And importantly, he won the James Beard Foundation Best Chef Southeast Award this year. So as a Nashville native, we know that he's going to have some great insights about the city culture and the culinary scene here. Chef, thank you so much for having us tonight.
Very happy to be here. Happy to have y'all.
Awesome. You can grab that mic.
There we go.
Sweet. So, this segment's actually called Rapid Fire, and it couldn't be any more appropriate.
Yeah, we got the ticket going off as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I like that. The ticket sliding right in front of us.
Live fire.
We're going to have, like, service sounds in this interview, which is absolutely perfect for food radio. So these questions are easy, nice and quick. The first thing I want to know is what your last great bite was. So, like, today, what's the last great thing you had to eat?
We make a vanilla malt gelato, really, our pastry chef, Rebecca Tertian, and Shannon, her assistant, and they spun that today, and that. So if I see them spin that, I eat it before it sets fully, you know, that soft, just spun.
It's like the equivalent
gelato
of raw cookie dough for gelato.
Yeah, it's just, that was, I don't eat anything for a while after that, because you want that taste to linger.
Awesome, great answer. This is a fun one, and you have to be honest. But what's in your home refrigerator, like, as we speak right now? Give us the visual.
A cooking vessel with the lid on it, which I would never allow. we have a lot of food, actually. You know, I have my wife and my three-year-old son at home, and my wife cooks sometimes twice a day at home. So we have a lot of fresh vegetables, and there's some cheese and cured meat. There's no fresh proteins, and the same stuff you'd seen everybody else's after that.
Well, I mean, you're winning that in terms of this trip, because everybody else, their fridge is like old cilantro, maybe a beer or two. And
no, we cook at home. I'll leave work and go cook at home. It's very important in our house. The garden out back, all that stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right. Well, next one should be interesting. I want to know what your favorite childhood meal is. Like, what comes to mind immediately?
I'm trying to think of what number one would be so that I don't. It was spaghetti night. It was probably my favorite for sure. You know, I grew up around Southern food and cornbread. You know, that's like the manna of the South, and something that I learned to make from my mom and grandma. But, you know, as a kid, it's like something that's everywhere. And spaghetti was kind of exotic, to be honest. And, you know, like, when we started going out to eat when I was a little kid was when Nashville started getting, like, restaurants. When the Shoney's opened near our house, that was, like, when we started going out. Other than that, we ate at home.
Is that a big moment in Nashville when the Shoney's opened?
I mean, I was pretty young to, like, to be able to grab that scope. But, yeah, I think that it kind of was. And that kind of brought cooking on a restaurant level that wasn't just mom and pop. For maybe, you know, we had meat and threes. prior to that, and they're a lunch only type of deal. So that was food coming to town.
A little bit of a tangent here, but we were just talking to Carrie at Peg Leg Porkers, and he was talking about how chain restaurants were really important to Nashville. And a lot of people think it's been like hot chicken is the real traditional thing of Nashville, but he was kind of talking about the chain restaurants. I mean, do you feel the same way?
I feel like they've had their hand in our development. I don't know that I would use the word important. that's the way food went, you know. I mean, you look at chefs now and are trying to drive off industrial farming in all its ways, right? But it went from at home and at the mom and pop restaurants to industrializing our system and making it to where this Shoney's can have the same shrimp as that Shoney's, you know. I think it's part of our history, for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue to the next question, which speaks maybe to how things have developed. What's your proudest piece of produce, like right now as we speak in the restaurant? It's October 3rd.
I think if we had any yellow squash left from one particular farmer grows a crookneck yellow squash that's like my favorite thing. And that's gone at this moment. But we have turnip greens from Troy Smiley at Smiley Hollow Farm right now. And that's a near and dear piece of food to this restaurant.
Awesome. Cool. Just the last question here. What's your post-shift drink? I've been asking chefs this too.
Water. Yeah. I don't drink anymore. Yeah. I haven't had a drink in like 5 years now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Second chef to have that answer.
Yeah. You know, it gets to a point where it's too much to juggle and your life starts spinning in this business. And I mean, stopping that brought my feet right back to the ground, and, you know, allowed me to focus and be happy at work and home. It was a big key for me.
Wise words, as we have many aspiring cooks and chefs listening to Heritage Radio Network. Take notes. On that note, we're going to take a very quick break. But actually, before we do that, I do have to ask, since Springer Mountain Farms is responsible for us being here, what's your favorite thing to do with chicken in the restaurant?
I like the smoked chicken. We're in no way a barbecue place, but we got a smoker from Peg Leg, actually.
He told us. He told us another story about that smoker.
Yeah, we caught that thing on fire. Wow. We smoked chickens a lot of Sundays back there, and on the 4th, we did a big party with Springer Mountain, and we smoked tons of chickens on a cinder block pit. That was the most fun. I think it was 50 birds at once, and that was just a blast.
Did you have fun with that smoker?
Oh yeah. The cinder block, you know, like the thing, like the smoker that Carrie built is amazing, and it allows us to be in this kitchen while we know our food is being taken care of. But if you can stand over the fire for the whole duration, and you're burning wood down to coals, and you're working off a cinder block and a metal grate with some barn tin, it's really fun. And that smoker breathes, you know. There's gaps between all those blocks, so it gives a different cook, for sure.
Great. Well, on that note, we will take a quick break right now. A quick word from our sponsor. We'll be right back, so please stay with us. It's Jack Inslee here with Katie Mosman Wadler on Heritage Radio Network's On Tour coverage, Nashville, Tennessee, Red City House. We'll be right back.
This episode was brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms Chicken. For almost 50 years, Springer has been family-owned and family-run. Today, there are over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second, even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association's seal of approval. Springer has also led the way in testing for and eliminating all herbicides and pesticides from the chicken's feed supply. Springer Mountain farmers know what's best for your chicken. We're into that. Better feed, better care for the animals. It just makes sense. From their family's farms to your family's table, Springer Mountain Farms. For more information, visit m.springermountainfarms.com.
All right, we are back. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network On Tour in Nashville, Tennessee. And our guest today is Chef Tandy Wilson of City House. Tandy, during that break, you got a very, very sweet hug. Can you tell us a little bit about who that was?
That was my son. He's my 3-year-old boy. I'm sorry, I get a little emotional. But he's the best. Yeah. Changed my life in ways I never know would happen.
What a sweetheart. Tandy just popped back into the back kitchen door and got a huge bear hug from this very sweet little boy. It's really nice to see. With an awesome rainbow snake.
Yeah, he's a cool dude. Yeah. He's way cooler than I could ever think about being.
Oh, that's what we always hope for our kids, right? All right, so on that note, you were around food a lot as a kid, and I've seen stories in your bio about cooking and being a part of the whole family cooking scene. When did you first know that you wanted to make a culinary career?
When I was in college, I took a job washing dishes my freshman year, and my sister was like, stay up there this summer, don't come home, you're just gonna fight with mom and dad because you're used to being free and they're not gonna let that happen, you know? And so I did, and when I showed that commitment, my parents followed up and came behind, and they were like, they told me, basically. And so, as soon as they said it, it was like a light bulb went off, and I was ready to pack my bags and leave college. And they were like, no, you need to finish this, and then we'll talk about that. So I ended up in restaurants through the rest of my years at UT. And actually, I worked full-time and graduated in 4 years. The restaurants, as much as they brought the wild side out, they created a lot of discipline for me as well.
Yeah. What was the most influential restaurant on your culinary training when you were coming up?
I think it would have to be Trevigne. I worked there for two and a half years in St. Helena. It closed last year, I think, which was, it was coming, but it was sad to see, I think. And it was a cool place. I mean, to learn about, cooking right off the farm and doing it on a level with just no fear about it. It was like, look at what we can make. And no matter how hard it was to make it, the opinion was, we can make this for 1,000 guests if we need to. So there's a certain swagger to that place that I'm not supremely confident guy, but that stuck with me about what we can accomplish in the kitchen.
All right. Did you ever have an epic kitchen fail that you think eventually maybe you learned something from and helped you develop a little bit more towards that swagger?
Yeah, when I was out there, I undercooked some chicken for a banquet one time, and that was the most embarrassing thing in the world. And those things, you don't forget about them. And I thought about it getting ready for work every day for like the year after that. And it's guilt and stupidity, I beat myself up really, really hard about it. And I think it was a good thing I did, because that's not something we really do anymore.
Yeah,
that was an epic fail. It was a big one.
So what was something at that time that you did that you felt really great about to kind of make up for that?
I think shortly thereafter, it wasn't ever printed on the menu. It was like a daily selection risotto type of thing. And like shortly after that, I got to put my idea on the menu. We say my idea, a conglomeration of all the ideas that I'd seen prior.
So from some very unfortunate undercooked chicken to around and feeling
terribly,
really confident about your
risotto solution. Yeah, to see an idea represented on the menu for a week was really amazing.
Yeah, cool. What's been your vision for City House, and how has that evolved since you opened in 2007?
I think in 2007, the idea was there were some cornerstone philosophies about integrity and just trying to be as transparent as we possibly can, and make a deal with the community to where they trust us.
Mm-hmm.
Those were really rough ideas at the beginning. And I think that's the hardest thing at the beginning of a restaurant is to, especially if it's your first, to define what it is and yourself and what you're doing. So through triumphs and mistakes over the coming years, you know, I didn't know what we were doing here for a long time. And I created a structure of this Italian idea and Southern food and rules. And now I think we know what we're doing. And so all the rules have been shed and we just cook food. It takes a while to grow into that skin and feel good about it.
And I imagine it takes some time to build up those relationships with your suppliers because you are really, really dedicated to your sourcing strategies.
Yeah.
Can you say a little bit about how maybe you've built up your produce networks?
Yeah. Tana Comer at Eaton's Creek Organics was like our first contact. And so she introduced us to Tally at Turnbull Creek, and that's been an amazing relationship. And, you know, but with those two primarily, that's who we talk about what we want in the coming seasons, and they tell us what they're going to do. It's a two-way street, you know, and we need to know what does good on their farm. It's trying to maximize the production off of their farm for this place has been a really fun puzzle to play with. And then, you know, we're right here downtown. So Troy at the downtown farmers market, he's not an organic farmer. He does spray as little as possible, but his roots run deeper farming in this community than anybody's. So for me, I believe he's a piece to the puzzle. And without him, we would lose a lot. Yeah. So, you know, it takes time. You got to meet people and earn their trust and show them that you're for real and you really... Like, you know, we want to buy and we want to buy regularly. I think that was a big thing. And you'll see as we eat some food in a little while, like, it's not a small portion of anything really here. So, you know, we buy cases of vegetables. And that was a huge help for us. It really got our foot in the door with the farmers, let them know that we're serious, rather than buying pounds, buying cases.
Yeah. So the partnerships are really critical.
You know, one of our biggest transitions was we used Heritage for all of our ears and heads
Represent.
And tails and everything at the beginning. We bought hearts and it was a huge thing because it gave us an advantage as far as writing our menus to work with things that people had never really seen in this market. Mm-hmm. And then it blossomed into a great relationship with Bear Creek Farms, which is a local pork and beef and lamb producer. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to take what we knew from working with y'all, where we got delivered cuts into what is a half hog a week program with them now.
Yeah.
To translate it into, you know, the best we can.
It's so cool that you were able to turn those kind of unique and, you know, mostly foreign to the population at the time products into something that was an advantage for you, because we often hear people who are a little bit worried about making that switch to kind of the less popular cuts or something they might not have heard of before.
Right.
So it's awesome that you were able to turn that around.
We're in the South here, and I don't know that it would be different in really any culture, but as you start to dig into your heritage, none of it is that far back.
It's true.
This is stuff that my grandma did.
Yeah.
You know, both of them. And the larder from the Morrison side of my family is something that's still around, that they boiled, you know, all the skin and fat down into the lard to cook with. So these things aren't, like, far away from us. They were just kind of shuttered by bigger restaurants for a while, I guess.
Well, kind of on that note of partnerships, you've cooked with a lot of great chefs from the Nashville area. We were just talking with Carrie. We know you guys recently did a dinner at the Beard House together.
Yeah.
Who are some of your favorite chefs in Nashville to eat with or to cook with?
I eat with Phil over at, like, whose restaurants I go to? Is that what you're asking
like,
me? Or who
like
we eat?
Which chefs are the most fun to actually eat food with?
Oh, yeah. Phil was a great guy. But I think my tight circle is the people you saw me on TV with mostly. You know, Pat and Tyler, I spend a lot of time with them. We get our families together at least a couple times a year.
Yeah.
And it's usually just a madhouse when all the kids are running wild. So those guys, for sure, I definitely enjoy dining with them. I like to eat with Margot McCormick a lot, though. She's just, she's a mentor to me. Mm-hmm. And I worked for her for 2.5 years, and it was phenomenal. I say she put the icing on the cake for me, because mm-hmm. she was the one that said, here's this piece of paper that needs to be a menu today, you know? Yeah. And no one ever did that for me before, and no one trusted me like that.
Uh-huh.
But she's just a great person and a great friend, and funny and fun, yeah, and enjoyable.
Cool, thank you. I have one more question for you, which is just wondering if you want to say a little something about the Little Chef Big Chef project that you did,
yeah,
with Louis' kids.
Yeah, it was a great thing. You know, we come to work every day and just kind of put our heads down and go to the grindstone. But bringing the kids into the kitchen, it took us out of our comfort zone and put us in a place. To me, it brought a bit more of a respect even into the kitchen and enjoyment. And to see them, like, you know, really, I think the cool days, Rebecca Tertian, our pastry chef here, had them. And she was naturally better at this than I was, and we both did things, but just watching her take the kids and make biscuits and make cornbread, it was really a neat thing. And then the dinner at the end was phenomenal, just an experience that I wasn't expecting and blew me out of the water, and it was really neat. We're turning into a community restaurant, and I think it was a great community event for that.
Yeah. Thank you. That looked like such a cool project. You can check them out if you Google Little Chef, Big Chef, Nashville. There's some really great footage online. You should check it out. So I want to thank you so much for answering my questions.
Of course.
We have another special guest who would love to ask you a question. Odetta Hartman is a writer and musician and a friend of Heritage Radio Network. And as we're in Music City, we want to hand it over for a little music question.
Sounds great.
How do you do?
Great. How are you?
I'm great. I'm having such a great time down here. And I just want to kind of round out this delicious conversation with some music. And we're wondering, who is your favorite musical artist?
I think, wow, that's like a what's your favorite food right there. The most important band to my adult life is the Drive-By Truckers. My favorite actual artist, I think that's a different question for somebody who lives in Nashville, because we see these people a lot, and so it would kind of be somewhere between John Prine and Marty Stewart.
So John Prine just played at the Ryman a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Did he have the lucky chance to come into your restaurant and have dinner?
He has not been in yet.
Okay, so imagine he wants to come in as soon as possible. What are you going to plate up for him and serve?
The sour corn cake on our menu, it's like an unleavened fermented corn cake with beans, and then we treat yellow squash in an Italian, like a Roman way. We roast it, don't fry it, but it's marinated in vinegar with garlic and mint. But it is a very European idea, like farinata becomes cornbread, but it's Southern food, and I really like feeding it to Southern people.
Amazing, that sounds delicious. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, Chef, thanks so much. We have two more quick ones. This is something we've been asking all the chefs down here. We call it big ups. Kind of giving you a chance to big up somebody else in the community that's doing great work that you think, you know, should be shouted out and more people should know about their work.
Oh, yeah. This place is about to open, TKO. They're in here somewhere. They're having their last meal before it starts. But it's Ryan and Ann Bernhardt, and it's kind of their take on Chinese Cantonese, and it's got a lot of Southern notes, but still just kind of cooking what they want to. But they got a really cool wok station with the big, crazy firepower. Just looks really fun to cook on. So I've tasted and seen, and I haven't been to the live action yet, but TKO Nashville is going to be an awesome thing.
You can't see the TKO shirt, but repping in full effect right here. And sort of selfish question, as we're tourists ourselves, but for people coming to Nashville for the first time, where are you sending them right off the plane? Like, you know, what's the first cab?
Yeah, I always say that Arnold's, it's a famous meet and three here, but that restaurant defines our city better than any other. Yeah. And I imagine everyone has told you that.
Oh, we had it for lunch. That was our first lunch. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what they do, you know, it's not like, it opened in the 80s, you know, so it's not like some way back thing. It is a living, breathing business that is gone from the first generation. Well, it's moving from the first generation into the second, and they continue to expand and improve. It really it speaks to this city better than any other place here.
And would you say that sort of is what Nashville food is to you? Does Arnold's kind of really represent it? I mean, I was going to ask you, like, you know, what is Nashville food to you?
Yeah, I think the history of Nashville food is represented there. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Where we're headed, where we're going, I think we have all kinds of ideas for that.
Including TKO.
And there's room for all of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. We'll pass it to Katie to wrap up.
All right. Thank you again, Tandy. This has been amazing. It's just so incredible to be sitting here in front of the fire talking to you in the kitchen. It's really a special treat for us. For our listeners, I'd love to encourage you all to check out Chef Tandy at Big Tandy on social media, and you can also follow at City House. So thank you so much for having us here today.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you all for coming.
This is Heritage Radio Network on tour in Nashville, Tennessee. You can find our entire series by searching Heritage Radio Network on tour on iTunes, Stitcher, or at heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. You can also keep in touch by subscribing to our newsletter and following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks, guys.
Bye.